that he should be used to it by now. While these thoughts chased each other aimlessly through his mind, he had been staring bleakly at a blue shimmer of energy filling the yawning hangar bay ahead. Belatedly, he registered what he was looking at. He thought, "Oh, this is bad." "Anakin," Obi-Wan began. He tried rerouting control paths through his yoke. No luck. Anakin drew up and tipped his forward surfaces down behind the sparking scrap that used to be R4. "Anakin!
Give me just a second, Master."
Anakin's voice had gone even tighter. A muffled thump, then another, louder, and a scrape and a squeal of ripping metal.
"This isn't quite as easy as it looks."
"Anakin!"
"What?"
"The hangar bay."
"What about it?"
"Have you noticed that the shield's still up?"
"Really?"
"Really. Not to mention so close that Obi-Wan could practically taste it."
"Oh, sorry. I've been busy."
Obi-Wan closed his eyes. Reaching into the Force, his mind followed the starfighter's mangled circuitry to locate and activate the sublight engine's manual test board. With a slight push, he triggered a command normally used only in bench tests. Full reverse. The cometary tail of glowing debris shed by his disintegrating starfighter shot past him and evaporated in a cascade of miniature starbursts on contact with the hangar shield, which was exactly what was about to happen to him. The only effect of full reverse from his failing engines was to give him more time to see it coming. Then Anakin's starfighter swooped in front of him, crossing left to right at a steep deflection. Energy flared from his cannons, and the shield emitters at the right side of the hangar door exploded into scrap. The blue shimmer of the bay shield flickered, faded, and vanished, just as Obi-Wan came spinning across the threshold and slammed along the deck, trailing sparks and a scream of tortured metal. His entire starfighter, what was left of it, vibrated with the roar of atmosphere howling out from the unshielded bay. Massive blast doors ground together like jaws. Another force touch on the manual test board cut power to his engines, but he couldn't trigger the explosive bolts on his cockpit canopy. And he had a bad feeling that those canopy bolts were the only thing on his craft that weren't about to explode. His lightsaber found his hand and blue energy flared. One swipe and the canopy burst away, ripped into space by the hurricane of escaping air. Obi-Wan flipped himself up into the stunningly cold gale and let it blow him tumbling away as the remnants of his battered craft finally exploded. He rode the shockwave while he let the force right him in the air. He landed cat-footed on the blackened streak, still hot enough to scorch his boots, that his landing had gouged into the deck. The hangar was full of battle droids. His shoulders dropped and his knees bent, and his lightsaber came up to angle in front of his face. There were far too many for him to fight alone, but he didn't mind. At least he was out of that blasted starfighter. Anakin slipped his craft toward the hangar through a fountain of junk and flash-frozen gas. One last touch of the yoke twisted his starfighter through the closing teeth of the blast doors just as Obi-Wan's canopy went the other way. Obi-Wan's ship was a hunk of glowing scrap punctuating a long smoking skid mark. Obi-Wan himself, beard rimed with frost, lightsaber out and flaming, stood in a tightening ring of battle droids. Anakin slewed his starfighter into a landing that scattered droids with the particle blast from his sublight thrusters, and for one second, he was 9 years old again, behind the controls of a starfighter in the Theed Royal Hangar, his first touch of a real ship's real cannons blasting battle droids. He'd have done the same right here, except that Palpatine was somewhere on the ship. They just might need one of the light shuttles in this hangar to get the Chancellor safely to the surface. A few dozen cannon blasts bouncing around in here could wreck them all. This he'd have to do by hand. One touch blew his canopy and he sprang from the cockpit, flipping upward to stand on the wing. Battle droids opened fire instantly, and Anakin's lightsaber flashed. R2, Locate a computer link. The little droid whistled at him, and Anakin allowed himself a tight smile. Sometimes he thought he could almost understand the droid's electrosonic code. Don't worry about us. Find Palpatine. Go on. I'll cover you. R2 popped out of its socket and bounced to the deck. Anakin jumped ahead of it into a cascade of blaster fire and let the Force direct his blade. Battle droids began to spark and collapse. Get to that link! Anakin had to shout above the whine of blasters and the roar of exploding droids. I'm going for Obi-Wan! No need. Anakin whirled to find Obi-Wan right behind him in the act of slicing neatly through the brain case of a battle droid. I appreciate the thought, Anakin, the Jedi Master said with a gentle smile. But I've already come for you. This, then, is Obi-Wan and Anakin. They are closer than friends, closer than brothers. Though Obi-Wan is 16 standard years Anakin's elder, they have become men together. Neither can imagine life without the other. The war has forged their two lives into one. The war that has done this is not the Clone Wars. Obi-Wan and Anakin's war began on Naboo, when Qui-Gon Jinn died at the hand of a Sith Lord. Master and Padawan and Jedi Knights together, they have fought this war for 13 years. Their war is their life, and their life is a weapon. Say what you will about the wisdom of ancient Master Yoda, or the deadly skill of Grim Mace Windu, the courage of Ki-Adi-Mundi, or the subtle wiles of Shakti. The greatness of all these Jedi is unquestioned, but it pales next to the legend that has grown around Kenobi and Skywalker. They stand alone. Together, they are unstoppable, unbeatable. They are the ultimate go-to guys of the Jedi Order. When the good guys absolutely, positively have to win, the call goes out. Obi-Wan and Anakin always answer. Whether Obi-Wan's legendary cleverness might beat Anakin's raw power, straight up, no rules, is the subject of schoolyard fistfights, creche pool wriggle matches, and pod chamber stink wars across the Republic. These struggles always end somehow with the combatants on both sides admitting that it doesn't matter. Anakin and Obi-Wan would never fight each other. They couldn't. They're a team. They're the team. And both of them are sure they always will be. Chapter 2. Dooku. The storm of blaster fire ricocheting through the hangar bay suddenly ceased. Clusters of battle droids withdrew behind ships and slipped out hatchways. Obi-Wan's familiar grimace showed past his blade as he let it shrink away. I hate it when they do that. Anakin's lightsaber was already back on his belt. When they do what? Disengage and fall back for no reason. There's always a reason, Master. Obi-Wan nodded. That's why I hate it. Anakin looked at the litter of smoking droid parts scattered throughout the hangar bay, shrugged, and snugged his black glove. R2, where's the Chancellor? The little droid's data jack rotated in the wall socket. Its hollow projector eye swiveled, and the blue scanning laser built a ghostly image near Anakin's boot. Palpatine, shackled into a large swivel chair. Even in the tiny translucent blur, he looked exhausted and in pain, but alive. Anakin's heart thumped once, painfully against his ribs. He wasn't too late. Not this time. He dropped to one knee and squinted at the image. Palpatine looked as if he'd aged 10 years since Anakin had last seen him. Muscle bulged along the young Jedi's jaw. If Grievous had hurt the Chancellor, had so much as touched him... The hand of jointed durasteel inside his black glove clenched so hard that electronic feedback made his shoulder ache. Obi-Wan spoke from above that shoulder. Do you have a location? The image rippled and twisted into a schematic map of the cruiser. Far up, at the top of the conning spire, R2 showed a pulsar of brighter blue. In the general's quarters, Obi-Wan scowled. Any sign of Grievous himself? The pulsar shifted to the cruiser's bridge. And gods? The hollow image rippled again and transformed into an image of the cruiser's general's quarters once more. Palpatine appeared to be alone. The chair sat in the center of an arc of empty floor, facing a huge curved viewing wall. Anakin muttered, "That doesn't make sense." "Of course it does. It's a trap." Anakin barely heard him. He stared down at his black-gloved fist. He opened his fist, closed it, opened it again. The ache from his shoulder flowed down to the middle of his bicep and didn't stop. His elbow sizzled, and his forearm. His wrist had been packed with red-hot gravel, and his hand was on fire. But it wasn't his hand, or his wrist, or his forearm, or his elbow. It was a creation of jointed durasteel and electrodrivers. "Anakin?" Anakin's lips drew back from his teeth. "It hurts." "What? Your replacement arm? When did you have it equipped with pain sensors?"
"I didn't. That's the point."
"The pain is in your mind, Anakin." "No." Anakin's heart froze over. His voice went cold as space. "I can feel him. Him. Dooku. He's here. Here on this ship."
"Ah."
Obi-Wan nodded. "I'm sure he is."
"You knew?"
"I guessed. Do you think Grievous couldn't have found Palpatine's beacon? It can hardly be accident that through all the ECM, the Chancellor's homing signal was in the clear. This is a trap. A Jedi trap." Obi-Wan laid a warm hand upon Anakin's shoulder, and his face was as grim as Anakin had ever seen it. "Possibly a trap set for us. Personally." Anakin's jaw tightened. "You're thinking of how he tried to recruit you on Geonosis, before he sent you down for execution. It's not impossible that we will again face that choice."
"It's not a choice."
Anakin rose. His durasteel hand clenched and stayed that way, a centimeter from his lightsaber. "Let him ask. My answer is right here on my belt." "Be mindful, Anakin. The Chancellor's safety is our only priority."
"Yes."
"Yes, of course." The ice in Anakin's chest thawed. "All right. It's a trap. Next move?" Obi-Wan allowed himself a bit of a smile of his own as he headed for the nearest exit from the hangar bay. "Same as always, my young friend. We spring it. I can work with this plan." Anakin turned to his astromech. "You stay here, R2." The little droid interrupted him with a wheedling whir. "No arguments. Stay. I mean it." R2-D2's whistling reply had a distinctly sulky tone. "Listen, R2, someone has to maintain computer contact. Do you see a data jack anywhere on me?" The droid seemed to acquiesce, but not before weeping what sounded like it might have been a suggestion where to look. Waiting by the open hatchway, Obi-Wan shook his head. "Honestly, the way you talk to that thing." Anakin started toward him. "Careful, Master. You'll hurt his feelings." He stopped in his tracks, a curious look on his face, as if he was trying to frown and to smile at the same time. "Anakin?" He didn't answer. He couldn't answer. He was looking at an image inside his head. Not an image. A reality. A memory of something that hadn't happened yet. He saw Count Dooku on his knees. He saw lightsabers crossed at the Count's throat. Clouds lifted from his heart. Clouds of Jabim, of Arganar, of Kamino, of even the Tusken camp. For the first time in too many years, he felt young as he really was. Young and free and full of light. "Master?" His voice seemed to be coming from someone else, someone who hadn't seen what he'd seen, hadn't done what he'd done. "Master, right here, right now, you and I..." "Yes?" Anakin blinked. "I think we're about to win the war." The vast semisphere of the view wall bloomed with battle. Sophisticated sensor algorithms compress the combat that sprawled throughout the galactic capital's orbit to a view the naked eye could enjoy. Cruisers, hundreds of kilometers apart, exchanging fire at near light speed, appeared to be practically hull to hull, joined by pulsing cables of flame. Turbo laser blasts became swift shafts of light that shattered into prismatic splinters against shields or bloomed into miniature supernovae that swallowed ships whole. The invisible gnat clouds of starfighter dogfights became a gleaming dance of shadow moths at the end of Coruscant's brief spring. Within that immense curve of computer-filtered carnage, the only furnishing was one lone chair, centered in an expanse of empty floor. This was called the General's Chair, just as this apartment atop the flagship's conning spire was called the General's Quarters. With his back to that chair and to the man shackled within it, hands folded behind him beneath his cloak of silken armor weave, stood Count Dooku, stood Darth Tyrannus, Lord of the Sith. He looked upon his master's handiwork, and it was good. More than good, it was magnificent. Even the occasional tremor of the deck beneath his boots, as the entire ship shuddered under enemy torpedo and turbolaser blasts, felt to him like applause. Behind him sounded the initiating hum of the intraship holocom, which crackled into a voice, both electronic and oddly expressive, as though a man spoke through a droid's electrosonic vocabulator.
Lord Tyrannus, Kenobi and Skywalker have arrived.
Yes. Dooku had felt them both in the Force. Drive them toward me.
My lord, I must express once more my objections.
Dooku turned. From his commanding height, he stared down at the blue-scanned hollow image of Invisible Hand's commander.
Your objections have been noted already, General. Leave the Jedi to me.
But driving them to you also sends them directly toward the Chancellor himself. Why does he remain on this ship at all? He should be hidden. He should be guarded. We should have had him out-system hours ago.
Matters are so, Count Dooku said, because Lord Sidious wishes them so. Should you desire to press your objections, please feel at liberty to take them up with him.
I don't believe that will be necessary.
Very well, then. Confine your efforts to preventing support troops from boarding. Without their pet clones to back them up, no Jedi is a danger to me.
The deck shuddered again, more sharply, followed by a sudden shift in the vector of the cruiser's artificial gravity that would have sent a lesser man stumbling. With the Force to maintain, the dignified solidity of his posture, the effect on Dooku was confined to the lift of one eyebrow.
And may I suggest that you devote some attention to protecting this ship? Having it destroyed with both you and me aboard might put something of a cramp in the war effort, don't you think?
It is already being done, my lord. Does my lord wish to observe the progress of the Jedi? I can feed the security monitors onto this channel.
Thank you, General. That will be welcome.
Gracious as ever, my lord. Grievous out.
Count Dooku allowed himself a near-invisible smile. His inviolable courtesy, the hallmark of a true aristocrat, was effortless. Yet somehow it seemed always to impress the common rabble, as well as those with the intellect of common rabble, regardless of accomplishment or station. Like, for example, that repulsive cyborg Grievous. He sighed. Grievous had his uses. Not only was he an able field commander, but he would soon make a marvelous scapegoat upon whom to hang every atrocity of this sadly necessary war. Someone had to take that particular fall, and Grievous was just the creature for the job. It certainly would not be Dooku. This was, in fact, one purpose of the cataclysmic battle outside.
but not the only one. The blue scanned image before him now became miniatures of Kenobi and Skywalker as he had seen them so many times before, shoulder to shoulder, lightsabers whirling as they enthusiastically dismantled droid after droid after droid, feeling as if they were winning, while in truth they were being chivied exactly where the Lords of the Sith wanted them to go. Such children they were. Dooku shook his head. It was almost too easy. This is Dooku, Darth Tyrannus, Count of Sereno. Once a great Jedi Master, now an even greater Lord of the Sith, Dooku is a dark colossus bestriding the galaxy. Nemesis of the corrupt Republic. Oriflamme of the principled Confederacy of Independent Systems. He is the very personification of shock and awe. He was one of the most respected and powerful Jedi in the Order's 25,000-year history. Yet at the age of 70, Dooku's principles would no longer allow him to serve a republic in which political power was for sale to the highest bidder. He'd said farewell to his former Padawan, Qui-Gon Jinn, now a legendary master in his own right. He'd said farewell to his close friends on the Jedi Council, Mace Windu, and the ancient Master Yoda. He'd said farewell to the Jedi Order itself. He is numbered among the lost, the Jedi who renounced their fealty to the Order and resigned their commissions of Jedi knighthood in service of ideals higher than even the Order itself professed. The Lost 20, as they have been known since Dooku joined their number, are remembered with both honor and regret among the Jedi. Their images, sculpted from bronzium, stand enshrined in the temple archives. These bronzium images serve as melancholy reminders that some Jedi have needs the Order cannot satisfy. Dooku had retired to his family estate, the planetary system of Sereno. Assuming his hereditary title as its count made him one of the wealthiest beings in the galaxy. Amid the unabashed corruption endemic to the Republic, his immense wealth could have bought the allegiance of any given number of senators. He could perhaps have bought control of the Republic itself. But a man of such heritage, such principle, could never stoop to be lord of a garbage heap, chief of a horde of scavengers squabbling over scraps. The Republic, to him, was nothing more than this. Instead, he used all the great power of his family fortune and the vastly greater power of his unquestioned integrity to begin the cleansing of the galaxy from the fester of this so-called democracy. He is the icon of the separatist movement, its public face. He is to the Confederacy of Independent Systems what Palpatine is to the Republic, the living symbol of the justice of its cause. This is the public story. This is the story that even Dooku, in his weaker moments, almost believes. The truth is more complicated. Dooku is different. He doesn't remember quite when he discovered this. It may have been when he was a young Padawan, betrayed by another learner who had claimed to be his friend. Lorian Nod had said it to his face. You don't know what friendship is. And he didn't. He had been angry, certainly. Furious that his reputation had been put at risk. And he had been angry at himself for his error in judgment, trusting as an ally one who was in fact an enemy. The most astonishing part of the whole affair had been that even after turning on him before the Jedi, the other boy had expected him to participate in a lie in the name of their friendship. It had been all so preposterous that he hadn't known how to reply. In fact, he has never been entirely sure what beings mean when they speak of friendship. Love, hate, joy, anger. Even when he can feel the energy of these emotions in others, they translate in his perception to other kinds of feelings, the kinds that make sense. Jealousy, he understands, and possessiveness.
He is fierce when any being encroaches on what is rightfully his. Intolerance. At the intractability of the universe and at the undisciplined lives of its inhabitants, this is his normal state. Spite is a recreation. He takes considerable pleasure from the suffering of his enemies. Pride is a virtue in an aristocrat, and indignation his inalienable right. When any dare to impugn his integrity, his honor, or his rightful place atop the natural hierarchy of authority. And moral outrage makes perfect sense to him. When the incorrigibly untidy affairs of ordinary beings refuse to conform to the plainly obvious structure of how society ought to be. He is entirely incapable of caring what any given creature might feel for him. He cares only what that creature might do for him or to him. Very possibly, he is what he is because other beings just aren't very interesting. Or even, in a sense, entirely real. For Dooku, other beings are mostly abstractions, simple schematic sketches who fall into two essential categories. The first category is assets. Beings who can be used to serve his various interests, such as, for most of his life, and to some extent even now, the Jedi, particularly Mace Windu and Yoda, both of whom had regarded him as their friend for so long that it had effectively blinded them to the truth of his activities. And of course, for now, the Trade Federation and the Intergalactic Banking Clan, the Techno Union, the Corporate Alliance, and the Weapon Lords of Geonosis, and even the common rabble of the galaxy, who exist largely to provide an audience of sufficient size to do justice to his grandeur. The other category is threats. In this second set, he numbers every sentient being he cannot include in the first. There is no third category. Someday, there may be not even a second. Being considered a threat by Count Dooku is a death sentence. A death sentence he plans to pronounce, for example, on his current allies, the heads of the aforementioned Trade Federation, Intergalactic Banking Clan, Techno Union and Corporate Alliance, and Geonosian Weaponeers. Treachery is the way of the Sith. Count Dooku watched with clinical distaste as the blue-scanned images of Kenobi and Skywalker engaged in a preposterous farce chase, pursued by destroyer droids into and out of turbolift pods that shot upward and downward and even sideways.
"It will be,"
he said slowly, meditatively, as though he spoke only to himself,
"an embarrassment to be captured by him."
The voice that answered him was so familiar that sometimes his very thoughts spoke in it, instead of in his own. "An embarrassment you can survive, Lord Tyrannis. After all, he is the greatest Jedi alive, is he not? And have we not ensured that all the galaxy shares this opinion?"
"Quite so, my master. Quite so."
Again, Dooku sighed. Today he felt every hour of his 83 years.
"It is fatiguing to play the villain for so long, master. I find myself looking forward to an honorable captivity."
A captivity that would allow him to sit out the rest of the war in comfort. A captivity that would allow him to forswear his former allegiances, when he would conveniently appear to finally discover the true extent of the Separatists' crimes against civilization, and bind himself to the new government with his reputation for integrity and idealism fully intact. The new government. This had been their star of destiny for lo these many years. A government clean, pure, direct. None of the messy scramble for the favor of ignorant rabble and subhuman creatures that made up the Republic he so despised. The government he would serve would be authority personified. Human
authority. It was no accident that the primary powers of the Confederacy of Independent Systems were Nymordian, Skakoan, Quarren and Aqualish, Ma'oon and Gossam, Cymerthian and Kuravar and Geonosian. At war's end, the aliens would be crushed, stripped of all they possessed, and their systems and their wealth would be given into the hands of the only beings who could be trusted with them, human beings. Dooku would serve an empire of man, and he would serve it as only he could, as he was born to. He would smash the Jedi Order to create it anew, not shackled by the corrupt, narcissistic, shabby little beings who called themselves politicians, but free to bring true authority and true peace to a galaxy that so badly needed both. An order that would not negotiate, would not mediate, an order that would enforce. The survivors of the Jedi Order would become the Sith Army, the fist of the Empire, and that fist would become a power beyond any Jedi's darkest dreams. The Jedi were not the only users of the Force in the galaxy. From Hapes to Harun Kal, from Khifu to Dathomir, powerful Force-capable humans and near-humans had long refused to surrender their children to lifelong bound servitude in the Jedi Order. They would not so refuse the Sith Army. They would not have the choice. Dooku frowned down at the hollow image. Kenobi and Skywalker were going through more low-comedy business with another balky turbolift, possibly Grievous having some fun with the shaft controls, while battle droids haplessly pursued. Really, it was all so undignified. May I suggest, Master, that we give Kenobi one last chance? The support of a Jedi of his integrity would be invaluable in establishing the political legitimacy of our empire.
Ah, yes. Kenobi.
His master's voice went silken.
You have long been interested in Kenobi, haven't you?
Of course. His master was my Padawan. In a sense, he's practically my grandson.
He is too old, too indoctrinated, irretrievably poisoned by Jedi fables. We established that on Geonosis, did we not? In his mind, he serves the Force itself. Reality is nothing in the face of such conviction.
Dooku sighed. He should, he supposed, have no difficulty with this, having ordered the Jedi Master's death once already. True enough, I suppose. How fortunate we are that I never labored under any such illusions.
Kenobi must die, today, at your hand. His death may be the code key of the final lock that will seal Skywalker to us forever.
Dooku understood. Not only would the death of his mentor tip Skywalker's already unstable emotional balance down the darkest of slopes, but it would also remove the greatest obstacle to Skywalker's successful conversion. As long as Kenobi was alive, Skywalker would never be securely in the camp of the Sith. Kenobi's unshakable faith in the values of the Jedi would keep the Jedi blindfold on Skywalker's eyes and the Jedi shackles on the young man's true power. Still, though, Dooku had some reservations. This had all come about too quickly. Had Sidious thought through all the implications of this operation? But I must ask my master, is Skywalker truly the man we want?
He is powerful, potentially more powerful than even myself.
Which is precisely, Dooku said meditatively, why it might be best if I were to kill him instead.
Are you so certain that you can?
Please. Of what use is power unstructured by discipline? The boy is as much a danger to himself as he is to his enemies, and that mechanical arm. Dooku's lip curled with cultivated distaste. Revolting.
Then perhaps you should have spared his real arm.
A gentleman would have learned to fight one-handed. Dooku flicked a dismissive wave. He's no longer even entirely human. With Grievous, the use of these bio-droid devices is almost forgivable. He was such a disgusting creature already that his mechanical parts are clearly an improvement. But a blend of droid and human? Appalling. The depths of bad taste. How are we to justify associating with him?
How fortunate I am, the silk in his master's voice softened further, to have an apprentice who feels it is appropriate to lecture me.
Dooku lifted an eyebrow. I have overstepped, my master,
he said with his customary grace. I am only observing, not arguing. Not at all.
Skywalker's arm makes him, for our purposes, even better. It is the permanent symbol of the sacrifices he has made in the name of peace and justice. It is a badge of heroism that he must publicly wear for the rest of his life. No one can ever look at him and doubt his honor, his courage, his integrity. He is perfect just as he is. Perfect. The only question that remains is whether he is capable of transcending the artificial limitations of his Jedi indoctrination. And that, my Lord Count, is precisely what today's operation is designed to discover.
Dooku could not argue. Not only had the Dark Lord introduced Dooku to realms of power beyond his most spectacular fantasies, but Sidious was also a political manipulator so subtle that his abilities might be considered to dwarf even the power of the dark side itself. It was said that whenever the Force closes a hatch, it opens a viewport. And every viewport that had so much as cracked in this past 13 standard years had found a Dark Lord of the Sith already at the rim, peering in, calculating how best to slip through. Improving upon his master's plan was near to impossible. His own idea of substituting Kenobi for Skywalker, he had to admit, was only the product of a certain misplaced sentimentality. Skywalker was almost certainly the man for the job. He should be. Darth Sidious had spent a considerable number of years making him so. Today's test would remove the almost. He had no doubt that Skywalker would fall. Dooku understood that this was more than a test for Skywalker, though Sidious had never said so directly. Dooku was certain that he himself was being tested as well. Success today would show his master that he was worthy of the mantle of mastery himself. By the end of the coming battle, he would have initiated Skywalker into the manifold glories of the dark side, just as Sidious had initiated him.
He gave no thought to failure. Why should he?
But, forgive me, Master, but Kenobi having fallen to my blade, are you certain Skywalker will ever accept my orders? You must admit that his biography offers little confidence that he is capable of obedience at all.
Skywalker's power brings with it more than mere obedience. It brings creativity and luck. We need never concern ourselves with the sort of instruction that Grievous, for example, requires. Even the blind fools in the Jedi Council see clearly enough to understand this. Even they no longer try to tell him how. They merely tell him what. And he finds a way. He always has.
Dooku nodded. For the first time since Sidious had revealed the true subtlety of this masterpiece, Dooku allowed himself to relax enough to imagine the outcome. With his heroic capture of Count Dooku, Anakin Skywalker will become the ultimate hero, the greatest hero in the history of the Republic, perhaps of the Jedi Order itself. The loss of his beloved partner,
will add just exactly the correct spice of tragedy to give melancholy weight to his every word when he gives his Holonet interviews denouncing the Senate's corruption as impeding the war effort. When he delicately, oh so delicately, not to mention reluctantly, insinuates that corruption in the Jedi Order prolong the war as well. When he announces the creation of a new order of Force-using warriors, he will be the perfect commanding general for the Sith Army. Dooku could only shake his head in awe. And to think that only days earlier, the Jedi had seemed so close to uncovering, even destroying, all he and his master had worked for. But he should never have feared. His master never lost. He would never lose. He was the definition of unbeatable. How can one defeat an enemy one thinks is a friend? And now, with a single brilliant stroke, his master would turn the Jedi Order back upon itself like an Ithrani Ouroboros devouring its own tail. This was the day, the hour. The death of Obi-Wan Kenobi would be the death of the Republic. Today would see the birth of the Empire.
Tyrannus, are you well?
Am I? Dooku realized that his eyes had missed it. Yes, my master. I am beyond well. Today, the climax, the grand finale, the culmination of all your decades of work, I find myself somewhat overcome.
Compose yourself, Tyrannus. Kenobi and Skywalker are nearly at the door. Play your part, my apprentice, and the galaxy is ours.
Dooku straightened and for the first time looked his master in the eyes.
Darth Sidious, Dark Lord of the Sith, sat in the general's chair, shackled to it at the wrist and ankle.
Dooku bowed to him. Thank you, Chancellor.
Palpatine of Naboo, Supreme Chancellor of the Republic, replied. Withdraw. They are here.
Chapter 3, The Way of the Sith.
The turbo lift's door whished open. Anakin pressed himself against the wall, a litter of saber-sliced droid parts around his feet. Beyond appeared to be a perfectly ordinary lift lobby, pale and bare and empty.
Made it, at last.
Anakin's whole body hummed to the tune of his blue-hot blade.
Anakin.
Obi-Wan stood against the opposite wall. He looked calm in a way Anakin could barely understand. He gave a significant stare down at the lightsaber in Anakin's hand.
Anakin, rescue, he said softly. Not mayhem.
Anakin kept his weapon right where it was.
And Dooku?
Once the Chancellor is safe, Obi-Wan said with a ghost of a smile, we can blow up the ship. Anakin's mechanical fingers tightened until the grip of his lightsaber creaked.
I'd rather do it by hand.
Obi-Wan slipped cautiously through the turbolift's door. Nothing shot at him. He beckoned.
I know this is difficult, Anakin. I know it's personal for you on many levels. You must take extra care to be mindful of your training here. And not only your combat training.
Heat rose in Anakin's cheeks.
I am not
your Padawan anymore, snarled inside his head. But that was adrenaline talking. He bit back the words and said instead,
going to let you down, Master, or Chancellor Palpatine.
I have no doubt of that. Just remember that Dooku is no mere dark Jedi like that Ventress woman. He is a Lord of the Sith. The jaws of this trap are about to snap shut, and there may be danger here beyond the merely physical.
Yes.
Anakin let his blade shrink away and moved past Obi-Wan into the turbolift lobby. Distant concussions boomed throughout the ship, and the floor rocked like a raft on a river in flood. He barely noticed.
There has been so much. What he's done.
not just to the Jedi, but to the galaxy.
Anakin, Obi-Wan began warningly. Don't worry, I'm not angry, and I'm not looking for revenge. I'm just... He lifted his lightsaber. I'm just looking forward to ending it.
Anticipation is distraction, I know. And I know that hope is as hollow as fear.
Anakin let himself smile just a bit.
And I know everything else you're dying to tell me right now.
Obi-Wan's slightly rueful bow of acknowledgement was as affectionate as a hug.
I suppose at some point I will eventually have to stop trying to train you.
Anakin's smile broadened toward a soft chuckle.
I think that's the first time you've ever admitted it.
They stopped at the door to the general's quarters, a huge oval of opalescent iridite chased with gold. Anakin stared at his ghostly, almost reflection while he reached into the room beyond with the Force, and let the Force reach into him.
I'm ready, Master. I know you are.
They stood a moment, side by side. Anakin didn't look at him. He stared into the door, through the door, searching in its shimmering depths for a hint of an unguessable future. He couldn't imagine not being at war.
Anakin.
Obi-Wan's voice had gone soft, and his hand was warm on Anakin's arm.
There is no other Jedi I would rather have at my side right now. No other man.
Anakin turned and found within Obi-Wan's eyes a depth of feeling he had only rarely glimpsed in all their years together, and the pure, uncomplicated love that rose up within him then felt like a promise from the Force itself.
I wouldn't have it any other way, Master. I believe,
his one-time master said, with a gently humorous look of astonishment at the words coming out of his mouth,
that you should get used to calling me Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan? Anakin said. Let's go get the Chancellor.
Yes, Obi-Wan said.
Let's. Inside a turbolift pod, Dooku watched hologramic images of Kenobi and Skywalker cautiously pick their way down the curving stairs from the entrance balcony to the main level of the General's quarters, moving slowly to stay braced against the pitching of the cruiser. The ship shuddered and bucked with multiple torpedo bursts, and the lights went out again. Lighting was always the first to fail, as power was diverted from life support to damage control.
My lord.
On the intership comm, Grievous sounded actively concerned.
Damage to the ship is becoming severe. 30% of automated weapon systems are down, and we may soon lose hyperspace capability.
Dooku nodded judiciously to himself, frowning down at the translucent blue ghosts slinking toward Palpatine. Sound the retreat for the entire strike force, General, and prepare the ship for jump. Once the Jedi are dead, I will join you on the bridge.
As my lord commands, Grievous out.
Indeed you are, you vile creature.
Dooku muttered to the dead comlink.
Out of luck and out of time.
He cast the comlink aside and ignored its clatter across the deck. He had no further use for it. Let it be destroyed along with Grievous, those repulsive bodyguards of his, and the rest of the cruiser, once he was safely captured and away. He nodded to the two hulking super battle droids that flanked him. One opened the lift door and they marched through, pivoting to take positions on either side. Dooku straightened his cloak of shimmering armor weave and strode grandly into the half-dark lift lobby. In the pale emergency lighting, the door to the General's quarters still smoldered where those two idiotic peasants had lightsabered it. To pick his way through the hole would risk getting his trousers scorched. Dooku sighed and gestured, and the opalescent wreckage of the door silently slid itself out of his way. He certainly did not intend to fight two Jedi with his pants on fire. Anakin slid along the bank of chairs on one side of the immense situation table that dominated the center of the General's quarters main room. Obi-Wan mirrored him on the opposite side. Silent lightning flashed and flared. The room's sole illumination came from the huge curving view wall at its far end. A storm of turbo laser blasts and flak bursts and the miniature supernovae that were the deaths of entire ships. A stark shadow against that backdrop of carnage, the silhouette of one tall chair. Anakin caught Obi-Wan's eye across the table and nodded toward the dark shape ahead. Obi-Wan replied with the Jedi hand signal for approach with caution and added the signal for be ready for action. Anakin's mouth compressed, like he needed to be told. After all the trouble they'd had with the turbo lifts, anything could be up here by now. The place could be full of droidicas for all they knew. The lights came back on. Anakin froze. The dark figure in the chair. It was Chancellor Palpatine. It was, and there were no droids to be seen. And his heart should have leapt within his chest, but Palpatine looked bad. The Chancellor looked beyond old, looked ancient like Yoda was ancient, possessed of incomprehensible age, and exhausted, and in pain, and worse. Anakin saw in the Chancellor's face something he'd never dreamed he'd find there, and it squeezed breath from his lungs and wiped words from his brain. Palpatine looked frightened. Anakin didn't know what to say. He couldn't imagine what to say. All he could imagine was what Grievous and Dooku must have done to put fear on the face of this brave good man. And that imagining ignited a sizzle in his blood that drew his face tight and clouded his heart and started again the low roll of thunder in his ears. Thunder from Arganar, from Jabim, thunder from the Tusken camp. If Obi-Wan was struck by any similar distress, it was invisible. With his customary grave courtesy, the Jedi Master inclined his head. "Chancellor," he said, a calmly respectful greeting, as though they had met by chance on the grand concourse of the Galactic Senate. Palpatine's only response was a tight murmur. "Anakin, behind you." Anakin didn't turn. He didn't have to. It wasn't just the clack of boot heels and clank of magnapeds crossing the threshold of the entrance balcony. The Force gathered within him and around him in a sudden clench like the fists of a startled man. In the Force, he could feel the focus of Palpatine's eyes, the source of the fear that rolled off him in billows like vapor down a block of frozen air. And he could feel the even colder wave of power. Colder than the frost on a Minok's mouth that slid into the room behind him like an ice dagger into his back. Funny, he thought. After Ventress, somehow I always expect the dark side to be hot. Something unlocked in his chest. The thunder in his ears dissolved into red smoke that coiled at the base of his spine. His lightsaber found his hand, and his lips peeled off his teeth in a smile that a crate dragon would have recognized. That trouble he was having with talking went away. "This," he murmured to Palpatine and to himself, "is not a problem." The voice that spoke from the entrance balcony was an elegant basso with undernotes of oily resonance like a Kryn Oak cavern horn. Count Dooku's voice. "General Kenobi, Anakin Skywalker. Gentleman, a term I use in its loosest possible sense, you are my prisoners." Now Anakin didn't have any troubles at all. The entrance balcony provided an appropriate angle, far above the Jedi, looking down upon them, for Dooku to make final assessments before beginning the farce. Like all true farce, the coming denouement would proceed with remorseless logic from its ridiculous premise. That Dooku could ever be overcome by mere Jedi. Any Jedi. What a pity his old friend Mace couldn't have joined them today. He had no doubt the Koran Master would have enjoyed the coming show. Dooku had always preferred an educated audience. At least Palpatine was here,
shackled within the great chair at the far end of the room, the space battle whirling upon the view wall behind him as though his stark silhouette spread great wings of war. But Palpatine was less audience than he was author. Not at all the same thing. Skywalker gave Dooku only his back, but his blade was already out, and his tall, lean frame stood frozen with anticipation. So motionless, he almost seemed to shiver. Pathetic. It was an insult to call this boy a Jedi at all. Kenobi now. He was something else entirely. A classic of his obsolete kind. He simply stood gazing calmly up at Dooku and the super battle droids that flanked him, hands open, utterly relaxed, on his face only an expression of mild interest. Dooku derived a certain melancholy satisfaction, a pleasurably lonely contemplation of his own unrecognized greatness, from a brief reflection that Skywalker would never understand how much thought and planning, how much work Lord Sidious had invested in so hastily orchestrating his sham victory. Nor would he ever understand the artistry, the true mastery that Dooku would wield in his own defeat. But thus was life. Sacrifices must be made for the greater good. There was a war on, after all. He called upon the Force, gathering it to himself and wrapping himself within it. He breathed it in and held it whirling inside his heart, clenching down upon it until he could feel the spin of the galaxy around him. Until he became the axis of the universe. This was the real power of the dark side. The power he had suspected even as a boy, had sought through his long life, until Darth Sidious had shown him that it had been his all along. The dark side didn't bring him to the center of the universe. It made him the center. He drew power into his innermost being until the Force itself existed only to serve his will. Now, the scene below subtly altered, though to the physical eye there was no change. Powered by the dark side, Dooku's perception took the measure of those below him with exhilarating precision. Kenobi was luminous, a transparent being, a window onto a sunlit meadow of the Force. Skywalker was a storm cloud, flickering with dangerous lightning, building the rotation that threatens a tornado. And then there was Palpatine, of course. He was beyond power. He showed nothing of what might be within. Though seen with the eyes of the dark side itself, Palpatine was an event horizon. Beneath his entirely ordinary surface was absolute, perfect nothingness. Darkness beyond darkness. A black hole of the Force. And he played his helpless hostage role perfectly. Get help! The edge of panic in his hoarse half-whisper sounded real even to Dooku. You must get help. Neither of you is any match for a Sith Lord. Now Skywalker turned, meeting Dooku's direct gaze for the first time since the abandoned hangar on Geonosis. His reply was clearly